As she reached the floating tree trunk, Job stretched out a long arm and drew her in beneath the branches. Dedan was already there, and Sean ducked in a second later. They each clung to a branch, and the leaves formed a low green bower over their heads. "I hit him," Job complained angrily. "I hit him right on the nose with a rocket. It was like hitting a bull buffalo with a slingshot. He just turned and came straight at me." Sean wiped the water from his eyes and face with the palm of his hand. "Titanium armor plate," he explained quietly. "They are almost invulnerable to conventional fire. Both pilot's cockpit and the engine compartment are tight and solid. The only thing you can do when one of those bastards comes at you is run and hide." He flicked his sodden hair back out of his eyes. "Anyway, you pulled him off us. He was just about to blast us with that dirty great cannon." Sean swam across to Claudia.
"You shouted at me," she accused. "You were quite rude. You called me a silly dilly bird."
"Better abused than dead," he grinned at her, and she smiled back.
"Is that an invitation, sir? I wouldn't mind a little abuse from you."
Underwater, he slipped an arm around her waist and hugged her.
"My God, how I've missed your cheek and sauce."
She pressed herself against him.
"I only realized after you were gone," she whispered.
"Me too," he confessed. "Up to then I thought I couldn't stand you. Then I realized I just couldn't do without you."
"I feel weak when you say that. Tell me you really mean it."
"Later," he hugged her. "First let's just try and get out of here alive." He left her and paddled across to Job's side of the leafy cavern. "Can you see the bank?" Job nodded. "Looks like the raid's over. They're coming out of the bunkers." Sean peered out from under the concealing branches. He saw troops moving cautiously about in the near bank.
"They'll be picking up the pieces for a while before they realized that we've scarpered. But keep an eye on them."
He paddled across to Dedan, who was watching the far bank.
"What do you see?"
"They're busy with themselves," Dedan pointed.
A stretcher party was working along the bank, picking up the dead and the wounded, while work details had already begun repairing the damaged fortifications and replacing destroyed camouflage. Nobody looked out across the river. There was other debris floating downstream with them. Severed branches and damaged equipment, empty oil drums, enough to draw attention away from their flimsy refuge.
"If we can avoid discovery until nightfall, we should have floated down beyond the army. Just keep both eyes wide open, Dedan."
"Mambo," he acknowledged, and concentrated his attention on the bank. Sean swam quietly back to Claudia and hung on to the branch beside her. She reached out for him immediately.
"I don't like you to be away even for a moment," she whispered. "Did you really mean what you said?"
He kissed her, and she kissed him back so fiercely that her teeth bruised his lower lip. He enjoyed the mild pain. She broke the embrace at last and immediately demanded again, "Did you mean it?"
"I can't do without you," he answered.
"You can do better than that."
"You are the most magnificent woman I've ever known."
"That's not bad, but it's still not what I want to hear."
"I love you," he admitted.
"That's it. Oh, Sean, that's it. And I love you, too."
She kissed him again, and they were oblivious to all else, their mouths blending and their bodies clinging wetly together below the surface. Sean didn't know how long it was until Job disturbed them.
"We're going ashore," he called.
The push of the current had forced the floating tree to the outside of the next river bend, and it was already dragging on the submerged sandbar. When Sean lowered his feet, he touched the bottom.
"Walk it into deeper water," Sean ordered,
and still concealed beneath its leafy bulk, they heaved and pushed it out until they felt it come free of the sandbar, and the current picked it up again and drifted it into the next stretch of the river. Sean was panting from the effort as he hung on to a branch above his head, only his head above the surface. Claudia paddled across to him and hung on to the same branch.
Sean, she said, and her mood had changed. I haven't been able to ask you, mostly because I don't want to hear the answer. She broke off and drew a deep breath.
My father?
She asked. Sean was silent as he sought the words to tell her. But it was Claudia who spoke again.
He didn't come back with you, did he?
Sean shook his head and his sodden locks dangled into his face.
Did he find his elephant?
She asked softly. Yes, Sean answered simply.
I'm glad, she said. I wanted that to be my last gift to him.
Now she let go of the branch and slipped both her arms around Sean's neck, laying her cheek against his so she didn't have to watch his face as she asked the next question.
Is my father dead, Sean? I must hear you say it before I will believe it.
With his free arm, he held her tightly and gathered himself to reply.
Yes, my darling, Capo is dead. But he died a man's death, the kind he would have wanted. And Tukutila, his elephant, went with him. Do you want to hear the details?
No.
She shook her head, holding him tightly.
Not now. Perhaps not ever. He's dead, and a part of me and my life dies with him.
He could find no word of comfort, and he held her as she began to weep for her father. She wept silently, clinging to him, the grief shaking her. Her tears mingled with the droplets of river water on her face, but he tasted their diluted salt on his lips as he kissed her again, and his heart went out to her. So they floated down on the wide green river, with the smoke and the smell of battle drifting over them from the bombarded banks, and the faint cries and groans of the wounded carrying to them across the water. Sean let her expend her silent grief, and slowly the sobs that rocked her abated, and at last she whispered throatily,
I don't know how I could have borne it without you to help me. You were so much alike, the two of you. I think that's what attracted me to you in the first place.
I take that as a compliment.
It was meant as one. He gave me a taste for men of power and strength.
Floating beside him, almost within touching distance, was a corpse. Trapped air ballooned the tiger-striped camouflage battle jacket and the body floated on its back. The face was very young, a boy of 15 years, perhaps. His wounds were washed almost bloodless. Just a faint pinky discharge, like smoke in the green water, drifted from them. But it was enough. Sean saw the gnarled saurian heads, scaled like the bark of an ancient oak, coming swiftly down the current, following the taint of blood. Ripples spreading from the hideous snouts, long tails fanning, two big crocodiles racing each other for the prize. One of the reptiles reached the corpse and reared out of the water. Its jaws lined with uneven rows of yellow fangs gaped wide, then closed over the corpse's arm. The fangs met through the dead flesh with a grinding sound that carried clearly to them, and Claudia gasped and turned her head away. Before the crocodile could pull the body below the surface, the second reptile, even larger than the first, fastened its jaws into the dead belly and began a gruesome tug of war. The fangs of the crocodile are not designed to shear clearly through meat and bone, so they held on with locked jaws and used their great combed tails to spin in the water, twisting viciously in a lather of white foam, rending the corpse between them, dismembering it, so they could hear the sinews tear and the joints of shoulder and groin separate. In fascinated horror, Claudia looked back and gagged as one of the giant reptiles rose high out of the water with an arm in its jaws and gulped at it convulsively. The creamy yellow scales of its throat bulged as the limb slid down, and then it lunged back to tear another morsel from the body. Tugging and fighting over the pathetic human fragments, they worked away from the floating tree, And Sean, remembering the long tear in his back from the barbed wire, felt a lift of relief, for his own blood must be scenting the green waters.
"Oh, God, it's so horrible," Claudia whispered. "It's becoming a terrible nightmare."
"This is Africa." Sean held her, trying to give her courage. "But I'm here with you now. It's going to be all right."
"Will it, Sean? Do you think we will get out of this alive?"
"There is no money-back guarantee," he admitted, "if that's what you're asking for." She gave one last sob, and then leant back in his arms and looked steadily into his eyes.
"I'm sorry," she said. "I'm acting like a baby. I nearly let go there, but it won't happen again, I promise you that. At least I found you before it's too late."
She smiled at him with forced gaiety, bobbing with water up to her chin. "We'll live for today, or what's left of it." "That's my girl," he grinned back at her. "Whatever happens, I'll be able to say, I loved Claudia Montero."
"And was loved by her in turn," she assured him.
And she kissed him again, a long, lingering kiss, warm and spiced with her tears, an expression not of lust, but of longing. For both of them, a pledge and an assurance, something true and certain in a world of dangerous uncertainty. Sean was not even aware of his own pervading physical arousal until she broke the kiss and demanded breathlessly,
"I want you now, this minute. I won't. I dare not wait. Oh, God, Sean, my darling, now we're alive and in love. But by tonight we could both be dead. Take me now."
He glanced quickly around their leafy arbour. Through the chinks he could see the banks. They seemed to have drifted below the Renamo fortifications. There was no further sign of life below the galleries of tall riverine trees, and the silence of the African noon was heavy and somnolent. Closer to them, just beyond arm's length, floated Job and Dadan, but only the backs of their bare heads were visible as they surveyed the river banks. Sean looked back at Claudia, looked into her honey-gold eyes, and he wanted her. He knew that he had never wanted anything in his life so desperately.
"Just say it one more time," she breathed huskily.
"I love you," he said. And they kissed again, but a different type of kiss. Hard, where the first had been soft, hot where it had been warm, and savagely urgent where it had been gentle and lingering.
"Quickly," she said into his mouth. "Every second is precious." And her hands below the surface of the water were tearing at their clothing.
He had to use one hand to keep them from slipping under the green water, but with the other he helped her as best he could. She opened the front of his bush jacket, and then her own shirt to the waist, and pressed herself to him. Her breasts were lubricated by the cool water. Her nipples were hard with wanting him. He could feel them distinctly sliding over his chest. They felt as big as ripe grapes. He tugged the tongue of the leather belt that held her khaki shorts, and she lifted herself to make it easier for him to unzip the fly, and then kicked to free her legs as he worked the clinging wet cloth down over her buttocks. He slipped the garment over his arm to prevent it floating away, and she was naked from the waist down. In frantic haste, she opened the front of his trousers and thrust in both hands to scoop him out.
"Oh, Sean," she blurted. "Oh, God, my darling, you're so big, so hard. Oh, please, quickly, quickly."
In the water, they were both weightless and as lithe as mating otters. Her long legs closed around his body, wrapping him, her knees up under his armpits, her ankles locked across the small of his back as she searched for him blindly. He angled his hips to meet her thrusts, and they almost succeeded, but it slipped away harmlessly between their tense, naked bellies. She groaned softly with frustration and reached down and seized him again. Then, with a lewd and beautiful arching of her back, she took in just the tip of him.